Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 308 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, once again. Playing a little hurt today, boys and girls. Coming off of a cold, bit of a laryngitis here, so if the voice sounds scratchy, you'll understand why. Today, my guest is Charles Vega. And Charles is an attorney down in the Daytona Beach area of Florida. And it's going to be a little weird because we have almost the exact same story. You know, both Charles and I in business for multiple years. I'd say law is my fourth career. I think he said it's his third career. I went to school late in life, started a solo practice, right down to the fact that we were both practicing martial artists as well. So it's almost like I feel like I'm interviewing myself. But Charles started off, once he got out of law school, and as a solo practitioner, and started doing business law and some other personal injury, some other types of commercial applications. And you're going to hear how he's grown his practice to the point where right about the size he wants it to be. He's very happy with where it is. He's going to continue to enjoy the ride and keep going as long as he can. And it's really kind of an inspiring story. So you listen to a couple old guys rant a little bit about the world on this episode, but I'm delighted to present to you Charles Vega. Charles Vega, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tyree. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. Please call me Neil. Charles, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, basically, I'll say two children. I'm married, you know, working hard a lot with the jobs that I had. And I wanted to be an attorney for a long time, but it was seemed like a far-reaching effort. No one in my family had ever been an attorney, never really met an attorney until I got a little bit older, maybe, and talked to a few, but nothing close. So after, I'll call this my third career, I decided to make a change and went to law school, applied to a couple law schools, got accepted, and went to night school again and worked full-time during the day. I traveled 180 miles a day back and forth to commuting to the law school four nights a week and sometimes during the weekends. Basically, my day started real early. 8 o'clock would be the day job, leave, drive to law school, come back home about 11 o'clock at night and start over again. Because it's something I always wanted to do. I was very fortunate that I stuck with it, and now I have my own law firm with four other attorneys. And this is, I've been able to build the business in less than 3 years to grow it to where it is today.
Well, that's pretty amazing. Our listeners are going to say, hey, wait, I think I'm listening to Neil's story. He's told that before. You know, I tell people that law was my fourth career, did the same thing, and spent a lot of time in the tech world before going to law school. Always wanted to go to law school. Nobody in my family had been to law school either. It was always something that I'd considered. Now, a little differently, I went full-time during the day because I was working, running a martial arts studio in the evening. So a little bit of the reverse. But again, I can tell you from personal experience, you must have had an extraordinarily understanding family for you to be working full-time and going to school full-time and traveling 180 miles a day to allow you to do that.
Well, Neil, I will tell you that my wife really was extremely supportive because it was one of those things where you really had to be 100% dedicated. And what I mean by that is weekends we're sitting on the couch in the corner with a new lamp I bought just to make sure that I had enough feed, kind of. And I say that only because that spot was my spot for 3.5 years. Every weekend and any evening, I may have not had to drive up there. And my wife literally put the garbage out, did all the chores. I mean, she did all of the things that, you know, you normally split your household chores on things. And she did it all. So it was very, very supportive. In fact, the law school I went to had classes for the spouses.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they had these classes and they really, actually, they invited the spouses to participate in some of the classes, see what it was like, because it's very stressful. But I give her all the credit for doing that because it really did help. And it was kind of funny. In some cases, she would say, hey, we have to go here. You know, we haven't seen this person in a long time. And I'm like, nope, can't go. Got to sit here and study. They gained 30 pounds sitting on the couch for 3.5 years just studying.
Yeah, I wish I could say that. I wish I could say that that was all I gained was 30 pounds. Actually, I did okay because I was continuing to teach martial arts in the evening. So I kind of held that first year bulge.
That was your job. For me, I had to put that on hold. I had to put everything on hold.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So here we are. You're in law school. You're going working full time. You know, you got a family that, by your own admission, you're somewhat ignoring for 3.5 years. But they're pulling everything together on your behalf, supporting you. So when you were going to law school, what was your intention? Did you think you're going to go work for, you know, big telecommunications law firm and kind of capitalize on your previous career, or were you looking to do something completely brand new?
You know, my first instinct, I really thought I'd end up being a corporate attorney.
Yeah.
I've worked for Fortune 500 companies my whole career, and I'm comfortable in that area. That was kind of the natural progression, but it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, I remember when I went to law school, the very first day, they said to us, you need to be able to answer this question. Maybe not today, but you need to answer it certainly by the middle of the semester. And that is, what kind of law do you want to practice? And of course, you're a first-year law student, and you think, okay, well, thousands upon thousands of people have gone through this process. They must know what they're talking about. I now realize that they didn't know what they're talking about, because virtually everybody I speak to on this program, I would say the vast majority, the overwhelming majority, started off thinking they were going to do one thing, and that's not what they ended up doing, either coming out of law school or very shortly thereafter. So, I mean, I went to law school thinking I was going to put bad guys in jail. I was going to be a prosecutor. So all my law school classes were focused around, you know, criminal law. And when it came time to pull the trigger, I was offered a job as a prosecutor. And I said, let me see what else is out there. And so what I did in law school really didn't matter in terms of the substantive law that I took, because I ended up going to work in a personal injury firm.
Right.
So tell me then what you're thinking. You thought you're going to do corporate law. When you came out of law school, what were your opportunities and how did you decide to go in the direction you went?
I think it was more monetary for me.
Okay.
Because working for Fortune 500 companies, I was making a salary. And when you come out of law school and you're a little bit older, it didn't seem that they valued that professional experience. It was more like, okay, you're going to be an associate somewhere. Well, no, I don't want to be in the back room doing research. I want to talk to people. I'm a people person. And I thought I could take my professional experience in working with businesses, and that's what I started out doing. And having clients from mostly medium-sized businesses, small businesses. I always wanted to do personal injury as well, so start doing that, car accidents, things like that. And I've had experience with that in the past, so that. So we kind of do a lot. We don't do, the things we don't do is, we don't do criminal defense. Top fireman family, so that was out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do Social Security, things like that. So I started working with an area I was comfortable with.
And that was business law, is that correct?
Business law, right.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You know, I think the legal profession has so many really solid points and has a lot of value, despite the public perception of lawyers, you know, trying to get along in life without the products of legal work or without lawyers, and see what that's like. But having said that, I will say that the one area where I think businesses do sell law students short, or people like you and me, they don't give credit to that previous history of work. And the decisions that they're making, and I get it, I understand why when I came out of law school, I was 52. I understand why law firms are saying, we want an associate who's going to be here at least 10, if not 20 years, make partners. So we're not going to make that investment in you. You might be wonderful, but we're not going to make that investment. I think that's short-sighted. I think there could be other ways that law firms take advantage of the work history of older students, such as yourself. And it's a shame that they don't.
Well, I think when you look at, let's just say, somebody who's a seasoned professional, they know how to talk to people. And different than somebody who's just out of school, who's totally, or even has a couple of years in there, there is a big difference. Now, there is something to be said about experience, and I don't portray that I know it all, and I've been able to make friends with attorneys that I can use as my advisors, mentors, you know, somebody to bounce things, ideas off of, or I've even brought in provide services to my client that I couldn't provide. So I'm not afraid to work with other people. I just found that when I had a client, or I say when we had a company that I talked to potentially, they didn't see that value. And been able to build a business reputation and doing the things I just said as far as how to talk to people, how to work with people, how to make sure that things do get done properly.
Well, one of the easiest ways I can see where that applies is that, you know, as I talk to lots of folks on this program, you know, one of the major complaints we have is the challenge that folks have with staffing their office, finding quality help to support them. And, you know, it occurs to me that one of the reasons is we keep hiring the. And I got nothing against young folks. I got a bunch of them in my family, okay? But if you're going to hire somebody straight out of college, they haven't had the workplace experience. They haven't had to work in a job and get along with people and understand the dynamics of the office. And you get that with a more seasoned employee. So I think law firms, by and large, are being short-sighted when they make those decisions just based on age. And I get it. It's not necessarily age discrimination. It's a value proposition and a business decision that they're making. But I think they're selling the seasoned, experienced worker short a little bit to their own detriment. But anyway, enough of that.
I think so. But then again, you take somebody like you, I have done it later, and we're doing what we say we're going to do.
Right.
And we do it in a professional way.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that even though I came late in practice, I've known a lot of people, and people that know I'm a professional call me and say, hey, Charlie, can you do this or do you do that? And even though they know I've not been doing it a long time, they know that because of my reputation, I'll take care of them and help them resolve their problem.
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you in part by my friend, Coach Mark Brockwell. Now, that name sounds familiar. You might remember hearing him as our guest on episode 277 of The Law Entrepreneur. And during that episode, we talked about a lot of different things. And one of is the fact that, did you know that only 12% of the law schools provide instruction on how to operate a law firm? 12%. That's one of the reasons managing a firm is difficult for most attorneys, particularly if they have no prior business education or experience. Wouldn't it be great if someone could guide you and save you the time and money figuring out how to grow and manage a profitable firm? Well, I highly recommend you visit with my friend, Coach Mark Rockwell. Mark helps individual attorneys, as well as law firm leadership teams, implement the structure and processes they need to grow and operate profitably. As a lawyer and a businessman, Mark knows firsthand what it's like to face the challenges of growing a profitable firm. Mark can help you do the same. Go to his website, coachrockwell.com, and download the Law Firm Checkup. That's Law Firm Checkup, which Mark will review with you at no cost. You'll get great insights on how to build a healthy, thriving law firm. You can call Mark directly at 503-784-7205 or visit his website at coachrockwell.com. That's coachrockwell.com. And my thanks to him personally for sponsoring today's episode. If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast.
Well, seasoned veterans almost sound like, you know, the guy making the baseball team late in his career. Seasoned veterans, you know, bring their own network with them too. And that oftentimes has a lot of value. All right, so here you are. You make this decision. You get through the law school. Your family reclaims you, only to find out that you decide, well, I'm going to open my own practice, which is going to take a lot of time, money, and energy as well. When you first started, tell me a little bit about the scenario. Did you start working, you know, from the kitchen table, or did you get physical space right away? Or how did you set up your practice?
Well, basically, it was I started with myself. The first thing actually I did was I incorporated and created a PLLC, but you know, did the basics on that, and then I started a website. First, I was networking to see if there was opportunity, but then I started networking to see where I could fit in the community as far as what services would be viable, would my experience be relevant. And I made a couple of good friends, attorney friends, and then I started adding people. The first person I added besides my wife doing the back end was her sister was out of work. So I hired her sister. And more people that started I get to know. Unfortunately, in that time, the pandemic was starting, so people were out of work. So I hired a couple of people that are out of work. They turned out to be great, trained them on the things that needed to be done. And the phone just kept on ringing, and we started adding people as the demand, you know, came through. So we are a remote business, though, I will say. You know, So right now, I'll just say I'm in Daytona Beach, Florida, and I'm licensed only in Florida, just to be clear. But I have attorneys now in Palm Coast, which is just a further north from us. I've got one in the West Coast in St. Petersburg, and I have one down in Miami. We work off of a cloud system. I've got three legal assistants located basically two locally here, one in Miami. And everybody works on this system. So I've got a staff that answers the phone and processes all of the calls and vets the calls for potential clients, does all the scanning and backup with high-speed scanners. And then, you know, we have our meetings. So we are a remote organization, so almost 100%. And for me, I guess I'm not so traditional on certain things. So our office, for the people that answer the phone, is basically a townhouse on the beach in Daytona. So we
could be worse.
A bit of a different business plan, right? Yeah. So, you know, I didn't want to really have a regular office, and it's only two people answering the phone there, but everyone else is remote, and it works is the best thing I can say to you, right?
Well, I think our audience would be interested in understanding when you first started and you added your wife, you added your sister-in-law here, what kinds of tasks were you having them do, and how did you go about training them and developing the systems that now run your practice?
So my wife is really good in the financial area. So she managed the books, let's just say. And I needed somebody to answer the phone. And her sister was very personal. So she's the kind of person that's bubbly when you call a business. And I've always felt that the people that answer the phone are the face of the company.
For sure.
So they're critical in any organization. So her skill sets were really just being a good-hearted person. And so that was the face of the company for a while. And I found more people to be like that answered the phone.
Okay. So, but at some point in time, you then added your paralegals. And how did you then get them up to speed using the cloud-based system that you have? And how did you divvy up the work amongst those individuals?
Okay. So basically, at the beginning, it was just me. So I had a legal assistant supporting myself, creating motions. And I basically hired people who were graduates of law school, but had not taken the bar, or were in the process of taking the bar.
Sure.
So they were familiar with it. And then I have also hired some other people who are paralegal, and I've also hired out of college as well.
Okay. So now you're fully staffed. You rely on technology.
Well, let me add one thing, Neil, to that. Is one of the things when you're new is, in law school, one of the things you're talking about, what didn't they teach? First thing is, well, one of the important things is, what form do I use, right?
Yeah.
So at the beginning, I had to really rely on a lot of other attorneys. Hey, what's, you know, whatever the notice was for, notice of appearance, whatever it was, motion to dismiss, I needed copies of that. So one of the first things I did was start building a library of paperwork. Sure. Motions, notices, orders, you know.
Pleading.
And that became a big deal as far as building a new law firm when you don't have that someplace else.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I mean, initially, I relied upon the State Bar Association has a set of pleadings, standard pleadings that you can use. And then there's another book that is very popular here in the state of Maryland, appropriately titled Pleading Cases in Maryland, that I relied upon. And that gets you 90% of the way home. You know, you have a good format, and then you develop a standardized format for your practice that incorporates those forms. But you still have to, you know, put the meat on the bones, and you still have to learn how to write a pleading. And so, you know, there's that level of training. So tell me a little bit about, you know, you've obviously been successful in your staffing. It doesn't seem like you've had too many difficulties there or disasters. Have you gone to any kind of standardized approach to screening new employees, any kind of, you know, personality evaluation or capability matching that some firms like to use?
No, I've interviewed in my career. I've been, you know, management. So yeah. I've probably interviewed thousands of people, you know, over the years. And I really relied on that experience. And you go back to talking about how does that help? Here's an example of that.
Yeah.
You know, my previous experience in hiring managers or hiring people, you get a good feel for, you know, who's going to be make your team a powerhouse. And luckily enough, I'll say in my previous careers, I was very successful in hiring, you know, creating powerhouse teams where we were very successful, because I strongly believe you're only as good as the people that work for you.
Yeah.
And hiring the right talent is important. And I do take my time doing that. But it's myself, I'll say that. I don't have anybody else really now. The one that's talking to them and making the decisions.
Well, again, not to beat this dead horse, I feel like I'm interviewing myself. I feel the same way because, all of these tests, Myers-Briggs, the DISCUS evaluation, they all have value and people get different things from that. But in my previous life, I did the same thing. I interviewed literally hundreds and hundreds of people over the course of my 30 years in business. And you get to the point where you can read a resume in about 30 seconds. And
right.
And so it's really about that connection that you make with an individual. And so these tools are great tools and they can be a great service and value to some people. Others maybe, take a different approach as you and I have done. Tell me where you think the practice is going and do you have a succession plan?
So the way I see it is I don't feel I want to get any bigger than we are. I want to be a little more efficient, I'll say. And as far as going forward, I would see that some of the attorneys that I have are, I feel, a top notch. And at some point in the future, I'll offer them some type of partnership, whether it's an equity partner or not, to make it worth their while to stick around.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, again, for attorneys are, in our age bracket, it's an important consideration of what is your exit strategy? Do you see an opportunity to create an equity partnership and then you write off into the sun and your law firm provide, passive income for you in your waning years? Or you're just going to wrap it up and stop taking clients?
I don't think, that could change, but I think maybe I might take a step back, 10 years from now, let's say, and maybe limit my exposure,
Well, I feel the same
right
way.
Now, I'm enjoying the ride,
Well, you and me both. And I think one of the things that I'll be looking forward to doing is throttling back and letting others take the lead and keeping my hand, on the steering wheel to some extent. But I do think that's a consideration of others out there listening who are at that stage in their life. We need to start thinking about a succession plan. We need to start thinking about what is our exit strategy. You've spent this time, you've done the work, you've built the practice. What are you going to do? Hopefully you're just not going to drop dead in your office and then everybody has to scramble. Because
right.
That's like the worst scenario. So, it's not a great thought to leave the interview with, but it's something that I think.
I think all of us think about, what do we want to do? Because we work to live, not live to work.
Sure.
And if you really want to enjoy, I'll say life, I'll just say this, is that you got to spend a little time with the people you enjoy spending time with and take a step back. It can't be all work. And the only people that can do that is you. And those people like you and I who are A-type personalities who push hard have to mentally take that break and say, hey, slow down a little bit. And we do have to look at the future. But I'm enjoying the ride right now. And I think that I'll do it for, as long as I feel I need to. But what I will say to people that are listening is that, you have to take care of your people and your people will take care of you. What's the guy, the Virgin Airways guy? He says that if you take care of your people, they'll take care of their clients or your customers. And I really believe that.
Yeah. Sir Richard Branson.
Richard Branson. Right. Yeah. And I believe I have a great team and always more to learn, but we have a great team and I don't see myself getting any bigger. I just see us continue the way we're at. We're where I want to be, I'll say, right now.
Great.
Size-wise.
Well, that's a perfectly, valid point to end on. I think an upbeat concept of I like where I'm at and I'm going to keep doing it while I can. So, Charles, tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up with anything you've had to share with us today.
Sure. They can reach us at 1-800-975-0529. or they can reach us at our website, which is Charles Vega, PA.
I'm sorry, it was Charles Vega what?
Charles Vega, PA.
Uh-huh.
Practicing attorney.
Yep.
So it's www.charlesvegapa.com.
.com. Okay, we had a little hiccup in the audio there. All right, we'll have all that in the show notes for the folks that want to follow up with that. And Charles, listen, I really do appreciate you taking the time to be with me today. It's like I said, it was kind of interesting.
It's very interesting, Neil. We have a lot in common.
We didn't even talk about the fact that both of us are practicing martial artists, and you taught a self-defense class for women. I did the same thing for many years. So, you know, brothers of a different mother, I think.
I think so. Sounds good, Neil. Maybe we could do this again in the future.
All right. Thanks so very much, Charles. And I do appreciate you being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.